With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was crying before I even shook hands.
Ni hao, Caitlin. Good to hear from you.
Nice to hear your voice. How is it in China, my friend?
China is fantastic, Caitlin. Actually, as you know, of somebody who lived here for a while, the smog here in China is not great, but we are having tremendously windy days here. And so therefore the wind is blowing the pollution away. And we're also now in a holiday, so as you know, when they're on a holiday here, they shut down the factories. So when they shut down the factories, there's not quite as much pollution. So on that note, I feel like I'm in LA.
Minor pollution, but not Beijing level. Yeah, I got pneumonia when I lived there. I almost died. It was bananas.
What happened?
I lived in a hutong where they burned coal for fuel, and I was breathing it in every day. And then eventually I went to the hospital, and they were like, oh, you have a lung infection. And I was like, a lung infection? That doesn't sound great. And my doctor was smoking a cigarette while she told me.
So, yeah.
Shit got real. But I liked living in Beijing very much. So, a lot of stuff's been happening. Let's start, as we usually do, by saying thank you to all of the people who have made amazing suggestions for who we should have on the podcast. The list continues to grow. The latest suggestion that I love, Mirka Federer.
Well, why not? I mean, what a great behind the scenes. You know, a lot of people don't realize, or maybe they do because they're Federer fans and they follow tennis, but Mirka was a very good tennis player in her own right, which is how her and Roger actually met, which was at the Olympics. And then they fell in love and got married. And, you know, she was a really good tennis player in her own right, which has been helpful, I think, for Roger because she knows the life. So that's been really good. But sadly, Roger's not playing here in China. So the chances of me getting Mirka are zero at this point. But having said that, we will endeavor to try and get her at some point, maybe in Australia even. So fingers crossed on that one.
Fingers crossed. You guys could talk tennis. You could talk fashion. Mirka has her shit together, seemingly. She seems to run the whole Federer operation. So yes, Mirka. Another idea for 2019 is a rule change. You and I had a very spirited back and forth about a video that caught Spanish player Fernando Verdasco seeming to basically abuse a ball kid for not bringing him a towel fast enough. This was all going down on Twitter. It is pretty reprehensible, and you had some really strong thoughts about it.
Yes, obviously our Racket Magazine podcast listeners are pretty cool and awesome. And, well, because hopefully some of them follow me on Twitter. And if they do, they would have seen my rant, which was pretty aggressive, I'm not going to lie. But I'm so over it, Caitlin. I'm so over these professional players thinking that these kids are like their servants. And, you know, having said that, even if you have servants, you don't treat them like this. Like, the word for him in that moment was just ridiculous. Listen, I was a player. I know what it's like to be out there and be stressed out. I wasn't exactly the best human being on the court. But when it came to the ball kids, I mean, no chance I was rude to them. It's like, what are you doing? This kid is trying his best. He runs over there. He, like, gestures that he didn't move fast enough. And then the poor kid, God love him, he, like, nods his head at the end, like, I got it, sir. I got it. Like, oh, my God. So enough with the towel. I'm so over it. Back 15 years ago, nobody got a friggin' towel. Steffi Graf would do the old finger under the chin, flick it, and Pete Sampras would do the finger across the forehead and flick it, and, you know, maybe use their shirt, wristbands, people. People wore wristbands, and you know what? If you're really desperate for the towel, they'd run over after a long game and towel themselves down. But now every single player, after every single point, wants the towel, and it drives me bananas. Literally, someone will get aced, and then they'll walk over and get the towel. It's like, what exactly did you do in that time of toweling yourself down and getting aced? It's like, give me a break. Half the time they're doing it to, like, I don't know, like, take their time. But back in the day, you know, people would, as we talked about, like, play with their strings, turn around, walk to their sides. Like, oh my God. So the ATP, I believe, in the next gen tournament at the end of the year, are going to have towel racks. So instead of getting the kids to bring it to you, you got to go get your own towel off the rack, which I think is a great idea. And it'll stop all this bullshit toweling down after every single point. It drives me nuts. And yelling at kids, not okay.
Yelling at kids is never okay, especially volunteer kids who are there having what you have to assume is like a dream experience, getting to be up close and personal with the best tennis players on the planet. Be nice to kids. Shouldn't be hard. Be nice to kids. Full stop.
No, shouldn't be hard.
Let's move into this week's interview. While you've been in China, you nabbed our second player, current player interview. And it's a great one with somebody who is a little bit controversial.
Yeah, a little controversial, a little polarizing, I would say. You know, people either love her or hate her. You know, players that people that watch her have that feeling. And it's Coco Vandeweghe. And so Coco is over here in China. She's had a bit of a rough year as far as her singles is concerned because she's had a few injuries and her ankle has been a real problem for her. She had to pull out of Wuhan in the middle of the match last week because of the ankle again. And struggled here in the first round. But, you know, Coco's battling away. Of course, she had an amazing moment about a month ago when she, of course, won her first Grand Slam doubles title and Grand Slam title with Ash Barty in the doubles at the US Open. So she's battling in doubles and she's trying to keep her shit together in singles. And but, you know, she's absolutely polarizing on the court. But the great thing about her is that she's super honest and she's very, very different off the court than she is on. I mean, she still sort of has that bravado when she walks around, but she's going to explain to you why she has that walk and why she has that bravado. And, you know, I like Coco a lot and I enjoy my one-on-one conversations with her. We spent a couple of breakfasts together here in China and just sat there and just talked about life and talked about some stuff. And I thought, God, Coco, you got to tell these stories on the podcast. So you're going to get to listen to that today.
The stories were great. She is super self-aware, and what I like so much about it, in addition to being an admirer of her all-court game that is filled with great volleying and obviously, like you said, spectacular doubles play, which is stuff that I love, she's really self-aware, and you guys start at that moment where you kind of dissect her on-the-court bravado and where it comes from, which is, I think is a very, very useful way to understand her. So it was a great interview. I'm really excited for people to listen to it. Check it out and enjoy it.
All right. We are here in Wuhan. I'm here with Coco Vandeweghe. Coco, thanks for joining me, mate.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast, the Racquet Magazine podcast, but you're going to have to now because you're going to be on it. You're officially.
Yes, I'm gonna have to check to make sure I'm represented properly. So, pressure's on then.
Pressure is on. Speaking of pressure, so obviously growing up in your family. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
Was it difficult? I mean, obviously, if people don't realize, you grew up in a very well-known sort of sporting family. How was that growing up in a family like that?
Well, I grew up in a well-known family in general, not just sports. My lineage is insane. My grandmother was Miss America. My grandfather was, as a patriarch of the family, was kind of the leader. He was going to medical school and playing in the NBA. He created the Staples Center. He worked for the president as developing the physical education of the school systems. I mean, he did all sorts of crazy cool things. Then it goes to my uncle who played in the NBA, Kiki, my mom, two-time Olympian in two different sports. My aunt became a doctor but played professional horse polo. And then my other uncle, Brooke, played pro beach volleyball and won a medal at the Goodwill Games. So I definitely come from a very sporty family, but just a very courageous family and just doing so many different things and different sports. And everyone asks me how cool it is, but it's all I knew. So it was very normal for me to have
success.
Well, just famous people around the house, being able to go and do different things. Like, I could go in the Lakers locker room, no problem. I could go shoot baskets at the Staples Center. And I went to, when I played at the tiebreak 10s at Madison Square Garden, people were coming up to me asking me how my grandfather was, because he played at the old MSG, and just things like that were normal to me. Mm-hmm. And it was more just fun of learning from different people that would come through my house. I thought all the people that came to my house were way cooler than my actual family. Like, Bill Walton used to stop by my house all the time because he lived in San Diego. And I thought Bill Walton was the coolest person ever in comparison to my family. But everyone revered my grandfather. My grandparents lived with me. And so that was just totally normal for me to have these kinds of experiences. But looking back at it as an adult, I'm like, yeah, that was pretty darn cool. And and when I started coming out on tour and people were asking me about it, I'm like, this is not a big deal. These are my aunts and uncles, just like everyone else has aunts and uncles and my cousins. And my family all in general is very competitive. We're a huge family, but we're very close-knit. And we are very quick to kick someone off their pedestal, even if they think they're somebody super important. So it's just the way I was raised. Everything was competitive. Card games, horse, everything was going to be competitive, whatever I did.
Is that, I guess one of the questions I want to know is, and I think a lot of people want to know about you, is because what do you think the most misunderstood part about you is? Thinking about the way you grew up. So what are some of the...
I think arrogance is one I hear a lot. And also I think bratty. Mm-hmm. I think those are the two that I get a lot, that I hear a lot, or I get trolled by or whatever, that is totally misunderstood. I wouldn't say I'm like fan favorite anywhere, because that's just not my personality. I even inside the close-knit circle of the WTA tour with the players, like, everyone knows I joke and kid, and I'm probably one of the louder ones in the locker room, and one of the messier ones in the locker room.
That I can definitely attest to.
But as far as like being open and boisterous and going and talking to everyone, that's just not my personality. So I am definitely like run of the mill in that area, but I'm definitely not the same personality off the court than I am on the court. It's just the way I was raised to be a competitor is who you see on the court, of, you know, wanting to hate somebody so much that you can beat them. That's how I think of somebody, whether I do or not. You know, I can play one of my good friends like I did Ash, and I was in her face from the first game because I wanted to make that point that, you know, I'm here to compete and I'm here to win, whether whoever you are across the net.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so we talk about the misunderstanding of you being bratty or sort of arrogant, et cetera, because you do get that a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you pretty well. So why do you think that's the case? And tell people what it is about you off the court that is different to on the court then.
Arrogance, I think it's more just the way I walk and carry myself, more so than anything else, which is funny because that was how my grandmother taught me how to walk. Mm-hmm. It's more of like a pageantry kind of thing. Mm-hmm. She taught me how to walk in heels. I went to cotillion. I did all that sort of thing. Went to church every Sunday. So I knew how to dress to the nines and present myself, and that's kind of the persona I have when I walk into the room. She always said, you know, shoulders back, head held high, walk with a presence of, you know, you're not looking at anybody, but, you know, you pick who you want to go to. If you see a friend and you go there, and people and I walk around the court, it's, I don't know, whatever word you want to use, a strut.
It's a strut.
And
it's a good strut.
Yeah, and it comes off as arrogant, but it's just the way I was taught how to stand up straight, shoulders back, head held high. That's just what I was taught, and it comes off as arrogance, but it's really just not. It's how I walk. You see me walk in a hallway.
You have the same walk in the hallway. And what about off the court though? So what's the difference with you that people that don't see you because they don't follow you around or go home with you or hang out with your friends? What is it about you that they wouldn't know?
I'm actually a very good listener. A lot of my friends, I'm the person that they come to listen. I'm not very in your face. I sit there. I give very good hugs. That's what I'm also known for.
And you do. I witnessed that yesterday. You hugging Bethany Maddox-Sands and littering about 10 feet off the ground.
But yeah, I'm not the same person at all. I'm very quiet, introverted. I'm actually very introverted. It takes a lot of energy for me to go out and to interact with a lot of people. And I'm very tired at the end of the day when I have to do that. But one-on-one, I'm fantastic. I relish in those moments of talking one-on-one with somebody and getting to know somebody on that level, because I feel like that's the best way I can articulate myself, mm-hmm. is when I'm one-on-one and I have someone's attention and I can see how they're reacting to what I'm saying or how they're presenting something towards me. But I'm very much a home buddy. I love being at home. I love having my siblings around and being a younger sibling and getting told what to do. Actually, it's something that I enjoy. But I think those are some of the things that off the court aren't seen as how, I mean, a lot of people were telling me about my older brother who came to the US Open because he was like a lot of the girls, I mean, because he was so passionate about watching his sister play and compete, mm-hmm. which is so funny to me because, I mean, that's amazing as a younger sister, because my brother and I were teammates always. Mm-hmm. We grew up playing the sports together. We're only a year and a half apart, and for me to have my brother like so proud of me and pumped and all this and just taking care of me, which was really enjoyable. I like to be taken care of. I like to be quiet and by myself at all at the same time. So it's really a catch 22 with me sometimes on and off the court.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think people would ever think that about you. So I'm glad that you told people that. Fed Cup, I know how much that means to you, but you and I were talking yesterday about Fed Cup and your sort of memories of go through the history of your Fed Cup.
Oh, history of the Fed Cup. I was started from the bottom. I was a Fed Cup hitting partner. My first ever event, I was actually 3 years I was a hitting partner, and I watched peers of mine playing and I was still a hitting partner. Mainly probably the one that everyone would recognize is Melanie Udan. We were the same age growing up, going through the juniors, and I was a hitting partner for her. And my first time was in Moscow. I'd never traveled overseas.
Seriously?
Never. My family didn't have the money for me to travel. Luckily, I grew up in California where tennis was, especially Southern California, where tennis is very booming. So I never played ITFs. I never did any of that. I went to a regular school. I didn't have time, and my parents didn't have money for me to go anywhere. And so I went to Europe for the first time, and that was a shock. That was a shock to go to Moscow. And then I finally got my first call up onto the team, and my first tie was in San Diego, which was a final. And I was on the team, and I did not expect to play. I'd just broken into the top 100 at the time. And the team was Bethany. Bethany and I weren't friends like we are now. Melanie, Liesl Huber, and myself. We were a team in San Diego. It's my hometown. And I was scared out of my mind playing. We were playing against Italy, which was Panetta, Francesca Schiavone, a little name from Vinci and Arani. They were no names at that point.
And ended up being a great team.
Yeah, they were a great doubles team. They were great singles players on their own, but Panetta was top notch, and Francesca had not won the French Open yet, but she was still a heck of a player. So the night before, I get called up by Mary Jo after a dinner, and she says, "Coco, I'm going to put you in. Melanie's going to sit." And Melanie had won every gosh darn match.
You can say goddamn. Yeah. We swear on the pod.
And got us all the way there. And I'm like, how the heck am I getting thrown in right now? I mean, I'd won a few matches in Asia and propelled myself, but Melanie was higher ranked. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And I remember going into the locker room. I was second match, and I was playing Francesca the first day. And I was getting so nervous, I was getting sick to my stomach, and I was dry heaving.
It's a whole different thing.
Oh, I'd never experienced it. I'd worked, because it was like my dream to play for my country. That's what I was raised to represent your country is the biggest thing you could ever do.
Biggest honor.
And whatever sport you were playing, I just wanted to be an Olympian and represent my country. So Fed Cup is tennis's closest next thing to Olympics, and I was out there playing, and honestly, I couldn't tell you what the score was. I couldn't remember how to play tennis. Like, it was straight sets. It wasn't bad, but I definitely was way out of my league. And so I thought, oh, I cried after the match. I'd never really cried after playing matches, and I was for sure I was getting pulled out the next day. We were down 2-0. Melanie and Bethany were for sure going to go in. Mary Jo pulls out Bethany and puts Melanie in. Melanie wins her first match, so now it's 2-1. I'm playing again now to keep us alive. And I'm like, again, panicking. And I get spanked by Panetta. I think it was like only a single break or something. I don't even remember.
But it felt like a nightmare.
It felt like it was 0-0. It felt bad. And I was crying before I even shook hands because I was like, I lost a tie for Team USA in the final.
In San Diego
in front of all my friends and family. And I was just absolute wreck. I drove home with my grandfather that night. I mean, it wasn't far away, but he stayed with me at the hotel to make sure I was okay. And drove home and I was like, this was terrible. I'm never playing again. And then my next one, I was called randomly to go to Argentina. I was last minute. I actually didn't even have any clay court shoes to go.
Well, because you didn't expect to play.
I didn't expect to play because Venus and Serena were there. And I asked Mary Jo, I was like, you know, what's my chance? She's like, you're not going to play. Don't worry about it. I was like, great, because Dubai and Doha are next. They're hard courts. I'm going to practice on a hard court if that's all right. Yeah, it's all good. I got thrown in because Serena was sick that morning, and I got thrown in to play Ormachea, got spanked on clay. And
So you've had this auspicious start to your career, and you think, I'm never going to win a match for my country.
Never, never. I won a dead rubber doubles with Taylor Townsend.
There you go.
Doesn't count. But I was like, I'm never playing Fed Cup. This is the worst experiences I'm having is during Fed Cup. I feel like I can't play tennis. Like, it's so nerve-wracking. I never know what the heck's happening in front of me. And then we go to Australia.
It's an interesting story because Australia ends up being quite an amazing place for you.
Yes, it does. It keeps coming back for me. So we go to Australia, and this time I actually know I'm going to be there. I'm on the team. This is like, for sure it's happening.
I'm the A player.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go.
I was an A player, but I knew I was going to play
at
least because it was Madison Keys, it was myself, Bethany, and Christina McHale. Yeah. The only reason I wasn't sure if I was going to play was because it was on red clay. And clay is not my specialty at all. But Christina's very good on clay. Maddie Keys was number one, and Bethany was better on clay than I am, still is now. So I get there, and we're training and practicing, and I'm good friends with Bethany already, and Christina and I are friends, but as funny as it was, even though we travel every week, I didn't know Maddie all that well. Mm-hmm. And there was like moments that you have to do during Fed Cup. There's, you know, kids' days, there's meet and greets, there's the press days and things like that.
Well, and you're with each other 24/7.
And you are with each other, but I hadn't practiced with her even because I was practicing with Bethany, I was practicing with Christina. And it's like the third or fourth day and we're interacting at dinners and things like that. And I didn't get Maddie's sarcasm at all. Like, I was missing it because I'd never interacted with her. And I'm like, I can't tell if she likes me or not. Honestly, and it was actually Bethany, we're at dinner. And Bethany's like, all right, guys, what's your favorite drink? And Maddie jumps quickly. Well, first it was Christina. Christina's like, I don't drink, really. You know, I don't know. I like a mojito here or there. And Bethany's like, nah, it's tequila. We are drinking tequila when we win this. And Maddie's like, I love tequila. And I'm like, same.
So you bonded over tequila.
We bonded over tequila. And then it was great because Maddie won the first day against Dash. Christina won the first day against Sam. So Mary Jo puts me in instead of Maddie to play
Sam.
Because I had a good record against Sam, and she wanted me to play Sam under pressure to force it. I lose the first set.
And you haven't won a singles match
yet. I haven't won a singles match. I haven't won a live match.
Okay.
And I lose the first set. Bad. I was playing bad again. And I'm like, this is it. My Fed Cup career is absolute crap. It's crap. This is ridiculous. I'm terrible. I hate Fed Cup. Like, all this stuff. I win the second set. I win the third set. I finally won my first ever tie.
playing Fed Cup on a surface I hate
against a great Fed Cup player,
great clay court player. And I mean, Sam was like top 20 at the time, and I was like 40 or 50 in the world. And so we had a great celebration afterwards. Bethany and I played dead rubber doubles. We had just won the Indian Wells title together randomly when we were playing to see if we could play together for the Olympics. And so we go out there and we're playing. I'd sweat my tail off at Brisbane. It's basically indoors in that Rafter arena. Yeah. And I cramped serving for the match in doubles. And I hit my first serve. I land. I go to swing at a forehand. I don't really reach it. And it's one of those bounces before the net. Bethany turns around and looks at me like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I am not okay. I am cramping in my calf right now." And I never cramp because I'd never imagined that I could cramp, especially in doubles.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what I do before, but doubles. Bethany's moving like a crazy person at net. Like, she's doing enough of the work for me. I don't have to do anything except get a serve in and make a return every once in a while. And I'm like, "B, we got a hold here. Like,
We got tequila waiting.
We have tequila waiting, and I cannot play a third set here." And somehow we hold, and I had enough energy to lift her up and give her a big old hug. And so I hop in the ice bath, and everyone's like, "Coco, come on, we got tequila, we got a party here.
Why don't you just put tequila in the ice bath?"
They didn't have it ready. No one was prepared. They didn't realize the kind of alcoholics they had on the Fed Cup team. Now they're prepared. They have the alcohol waiting for us. And it's actually a running joke that, like, especially with Lisa and Kathy on the team now, and Bethany and I have been a staple on the team for a little bit.
Lisa Raymond and Kathy Rinaldi, you guys get it
straight. We were always like, "All right, so we want some tequila, we want some champagne waiting, like none of this like bougie stuff for like the sponsors and everything, like the fancy red wines and stuff. No, we want the good stuff.
We want the good stuff.
We want to pop a bottle of champagne and then get going." And so we end up doing tequila. We gave Christina McHale her first shot.
Yes.
Which she did not enjoy, but she did it. But yeah, we had a great time together. We bonded, and then we became friends ever since.
Yeah.
And
then you end up winning it last year.
Yeah.
What was that like?
That was amazing. Yeah. That was amazing. Because I'd worked so hard personally and as a team collectively to get to the final. I had sacrificed so much in my WTA season for Fed Cup. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it was a huge sacrifice, you know, in hindsight into this year of how late I had to play, how many matches I had to play, and how much energy it took out of me to rally my team, be team leader at some of the instances, because Bethany...
Which you now, after telling people that, you know, everyone thinks that you're brash and, you know, arrogant and all that sort of stuff because of what they see on the court, but what they don't realize is that you're not really that person off the court.
No.
You're not really the rah-rah team person, but people make you that.
Yeah.
And they made you that.
I get looked at to be that person, which is okay for me. Like, I lead by play. That's how I like to lead. And I don't mind checking other people just because, you know, I've been checked myself for my antics and things like that, and I can check other people. And, you know, at the time in the final, it was Sloan, myself, Shelby Rogers, and Allison Risk. And Allie Risk was dog sick. And Shelby had the bad knee. Now she had to have surgery. And so it was Sloan and I. Sloan hadn't been on a team. I'd been on a team with Shelby and Allie Risk. So Kathy was making it a big point that, like, "Hey, Coco, like, we need to have Sloan be part of the team," and everything like that. And Sloan's great in just being able to get in. And but, you know, it's not always receptive, especially when you're texting and trying to figure out the stupid things that Fed Cup comes along with. What's everyone going to wear for the official dinner?
Yeah.
You know, who wants to hit what times? You know, just dumb things.
What food do you want to eat?
Yeah, don't matter. But some people are like, "Oh, this is really important." It's like, guys, like, who gives a crap? Like, for me, I'm super Southern California, super laid back.
Whatever.
Like,
put me in flip flops and t-shirt.
Whatever. I'll take the crappy time at 8 a.m. It's fine. I'll take a nap. Like, it's not a big deal. And so it was more tough for me to be like, "All right, Sloan, I know you've had a great U.S. Open, a great time, but you really, Allie and Shelby need to see that you're in this for team."
Yeah.
And Kathy as well needs to see it. Mm-hmm. And so I talked with her over the phone when I was actually in London before the tie, before we saw each other in China. Just, you know, kind of because I'd been getting messages from the other two girls and Kathy. I heard from Sloan and things like that. I'm like, no, I haven't heard from Sloan, but honestly, like, I've been playing and traveling and it's not like I text Sloan every day. So yeah. I called her up and she's like, honestly, Coco, I've turned my phone off since the US Open because everyone's just, like, blasting me with messages. I'm like, cool, just, like, send the girls, like, a thumbs up. Like, that's all they need, and make sure you're, like, aware that of what they're doing. And she was super receptive and was great, and it was a great tie together as a team and celebrated afterwards. Jenny Brady was there as team captain cheerleader. She actually got smashed way before the press conference was even done. And we have videos of us spraying champagne in the locker room, and my trophy ended up being the trophy that everyone was doing the chalice out of. Like, it was a communal chalice of drinking out of, and it was the stickiest thing I got back when I, like, unpacked my suitcase afterwards. My trophy was a mess, and I'm like, oh, why'd my trophy have to be the one?
Well, because you were the one. I mean, you held the team together through thick and thin for the whole year.
I went at it again this year, and we're in the finals again. Yeah, I don't. Undecided.
You're starting a dynasty here at the US again, you know? Well, maybe it's your family upbringing as well, that playing for your country is so important.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Speaking of countries, Australia, we're going to go back to that because now you have Pat Cash as your coach.
Yeah.
He's an Aussie.
Yeah.
You have Ash Barty, your doubles partner, who's an Aussie.
Yeah.
What's up with the Australian affiliation here? And secondly, I want you to talk a little bit about your role with Ash and the doubles and how much that meant to you. And congratulations for winning the US Open.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, the Australian connection was totally random. The only time I had ever met Pat before is I did an exhibition at Indian Wells, John McEnroe's charity event, and it was like a world team tennis deal. So that was the only time I met Pat, and we actually had a hit the next day. And I never saw him again. And I was at the French Open, last year French Open. And the coach I was working with at the time, Craig Carden, and I stopped right at French Open. I lost my singles. I was still in doubles and mixed, but we stopped. It had run its course, and we both wanted different things, and we're still friendly now, and so I was basically ready to get out of Europe.
You just needed a new voice.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, that happens. We had worked together for 2 years, and it was stale for both of us. There were some weeks where I was super receptive. There was other weeks where he wasn't full on because, you know, you travel every week.
It's like,
and
it's a relationship.
Yeah, it gets tough, and if you don't want to do it anymore, you don't want to do it. And neither of us did, so it worked out for the better. And I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm out of the French. I'm going home for some TLC because I was super close with Craig, and I just needed some TLC with my mom and my family, and so I wasn't planning on going home after the French. I was supposed to stay in Europe. I just bolted. I was out of there. I went
home. You like doing that.
I do, but it was kind of stupid, but it was well worth it. I was only home for 3 days. 3 days before I was back on a flight back to Europe. Mm-hmm. And I get a call from my agent day one, and they're like, okay, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I'm just going to play the rest of the Europe grass court season by myself. I don't need a coach.
Me and Nick Kyrgios.
Whatever. Like, I don't care. I don't need it. Like, I can't deal with this. I'm off on my own anyway. And they're like, that's a terrible decision. I'm going to give you some options. So they gave me like three coaches options, and Pat's name was one of them. And I was like, it's Pat. Like, why would he be interested in coaching, you know, me, one, but also a female player, two, because he's such a legend in a men's game. You know, it's like a weird concept. And I knew he had coached other players before, and they were all men, Rzetsky and stuff like that. So he hasn't coached in a while. And so I said, well, if Pat's interested, like, I love his number, and I'll give him a call. So this is day two. Now it's countdown. I have only one more day left at home. So I have a phone call with Pat. And the second day, he's in London. And I call him up and talk a little bit. And he's like, I'm gonna call you tomorrow. I'm like, cool, I'm going to be at the airport coming back to Europe. We hadn't even decided to work together. So I was at the airport in San Diego. And I get a call back, and he's like, you know, I don't think Wimbledon's enough time. I think we got to work. If you're all in, we're gonna finish out the year together, and I need your commitment to that. And I was hesitant because I'm like, I don't even know you. Yeah, like, I don't know how you talk when you're on the court and personality off the court, because you got to spend all the time with this person. Yeah. And you don't know me at all, so I was...
You might hate me after
that. I mean, that happened. So I was like, I just was like, basically, screw it. Let's go. Like, yeah, let's do it. We'll go to U.S. Open. That was our end date. And so first tournament we play, I had match points against Wit Hof and Hertogenbosch. First round, I was defending champion.
Oh, no. You lost first round.
I lost first round.
Oh, shit. That was my
first... start with Pat, and we went straight out to the practice court afterwards, trained for two more hours out there on the practice court, and then we were just breaking down technique of every stroke of my game and simplifying and doing different things and working on, obviously, grass court stuff, the volleys, transition, slice.
Cut to you make the court of Wimbledon.
Yeah, then he couldn't come to Birmingham, so I was solo Birmingham because he was doing commentary for Queens, and I made quarters there, and then I make quarters of Wimbledon. I lose to Magdalena
Rybakova.
Yep, and it was...
I commentated that match.
It was such a hurting loss for me because I lost because I wasn't mentally prepared, and it shell-shocked me to the point where I was like, I don't ever want to feel like this ever again, where mentally, like, I was had good days, bad days, in between days.
Yeah, your words but I actually never... were, because I saw you. I think I saw you the next day. Did I see you the next day? Did I see you?
I was there. Directly after God. I was there till the final.
Practice.
Yeah.
But you said to me, your words were, what do you do when you just choke?
Yeah.
I mean, you admitted that. I
completely, for lack of a better term, shit the bed.
Yeah.
I completely did. I was... my moment. Next round, I believe I was going to play Muguruza.
Did you feel pressure because you'd made the semis of the Aussie?
No,
is that right?
Yes, I made semis. I lost to Venus. Yeah. I felt pressure because I knew I could make the final there.
Yeah.
Because I had a good record against Muguruza.
So what was on the grass. Lesson from that?
Don't look ahead. One, but I ended up hiring a mental coach after that. Mm. Pat recommended a guy. His name's Don McPherson. And still work with him now. And so I was there. And also, another pouring salt in the wound, Pat made me stay in London to the end of the tournament.
Practice.
Oh, where nice. Normally my MO is like, peace, I'm out of here. I'm going back to California. I'm parking myself on the beach. And you won't see me for like another week when I practice 2 days before I play a world team tennis match. Mm-hmm. And then I go play Stanford. Yep. And that's usually what I end up doing. And he's like, I was on the phone, you know, with my mom's like asking me, because I call my mom and she's like, when are you going to come home? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to look at flights tomorrow. And Pat's like, no, you're not. You're here.
I remember. You worked on your serve.
Oh,
your ball toss.
God. We worked on simplifying the serve, simplifying the forehand, simplifying the backhand, ball toss of the serve, and all sorts of things that... can't even keep track. And he basically stripped my game down from A to B, which I hadn't done since I created my game and created my technique.
How much does it do you think it changes throughout a career of a player?
I think it changes constantly, because if you're not evolving, you're staying still, and new players are coming in. New styles of game are coming in. I mean, you can't say that 10 years ago the same style of play is being played now. No, even on the women's tour.
Definitely not. And a lot more physical.
It's just different. So I created my technique, and I had the same technique since I started playing tennis. Yeah. No one had ever touched anything that I have done.
It just tried to control you.
And sometimes, most of the time, in different ways. And I had never had that. So I went home for 2 days after the finals of Wimbledon, and Pat joined me 2 days later. And we trained at my house and everything. And then we went to Stanford. And I made the finals at Stanford, yeah. And lost to Maddie Keys.
Great match.
And then we went to Montreal, and I was zonked. Yeah. I was zonked
It's a tough transition.
Yeah, and it was tough transition. I was going to pull out if the fine wasn't so crazy big because I knew I was absolutely zonked.
Yeah, physically.
And I wasn't going to be able to play to what I wanted to play, which is always hard for an athlete when you want to play at a certain stage.
And you were learning, right, at that stage how to manage playing a lot of matches, because you really hadn't had that consistency.
And also, people forget how much of a mental toll it is to be changing technique.
Yeah.
You know, you're really good one day, and then the next day you're crap. Yeah. And you're like,
why don't I just go
why
back
can't I just make like two balls in a row? Yeah, like things like that. And so the whole thing was just like, and you make it to a final. I made finals of singles and doubles that week. Yeah. I won the doubles and I lost in the finals of singles. So I had tons of matches. Lost to Aga, who was like one of the toughest people you could play in a first round and be mentally like, I'm here to play. Yeah. So I lost there. I go to Cincinnati after that. I'd actually went to New York for a couple days. I have some friends in New York and hung out and kind of just like put the tennis rackets away for like 3 days before going to Cincinnati. And I'm playing Maddie Keys again.
Yeah.
First round.
Yeah.
Tough three-setter, but it was a good match. And I went to New York afterwards, trained in the Hamptons for a little bit. Actually hit with Ostapenko a ton there. She was also there. And
how much did like all the transitional work change, working on the technique mentally? Now you start to feel like you're one of the best players in the world, which you were.
Yeah,
you go into the Open. How special was that day with the four of you, four Americans, in the semis of the U.S. Open? And what do you take from that tournament?
It was actually in the moment not special.
Yeah,
because I didn't realize, you know, you're so focused on yourself when you're playing that I was like, who cares?
Yeah.
But then afterwards, you're like, holy crap, that was a huge, big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, being an American, all four of us playing for a Grand Slam title, there's going to be an American guaranteed. That hasn't happened since, like, the 70s. Mm-hmm. And it was showing kind of, there was a moment of showing, like, the new guard of American tennis mm-hmm. versus the old guard of Venus, mm-hmm. which, you know, For players to compete against Venus or Serena for a Grand Slam title, that's like you're playing against the greatest of all times mm-hmm. for a Grand Slam title. These are people you watched growing up. And I played Venus at Australian semis, but I had my moment, and I got spanked again in the semis by Maddie Keys. And Maddie played
Madison's
unbelievable.
Madison's your, like, kryptonite, and Sloane's Madison's kryptonite.
It was. I the first time I had ever played Madison was at Stanford. Mm. And then we played each other three times in a row.
Yeah.
And I was like, gosh, I was convinced. I was like, third time's a charm. I'm going to get her this time. Like, I was close the second time, for sure the third time. No. She played lights out. She played unbelievable. And, you know, it was another learning curve. But I was like, okay, well, now we have Fed Cup to look forward to. And I was super pumped to get going, to get to Fed Cup, and Pat informed me that I was probably going to be taken out of my doubles retirement that I had self-put myself in. Because he was forcing me to play doubles, like, in places, and it wasn't with people I didn't want to play with. Like, I played with Abby Spears, who's one of my good friends. Yeah. We grew up together in San Diego.
No, you were always a good doubles player. I mean, I
just
I remember
didn't
you
want to
telling,
play.
I remember you telling me
I like playing mixed better.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit less pressure. But you also told me how it was difficult playing with Martina Hingis when Craig made you play. Even though it was good for you, it was difficult because you had a lot of pressure on you because she was such a good doubles player, and she was playing doubles only. And it didn't feel good for you because if you were tired and didn't want to play, you felt obligated to still play and still do well with her.
Yeah.
So what's the difference?
And also, I was following up her and Sonya's incredible couple years.
Yeah, it was difficult.
So every time I lost, it was like, my fault because it's a new partner.
No, it's 100%
this
fault.
And that.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. And so I was like, I don't need this. Like, I'm playing well in singles. Like, I just want to focus on singles.
Yeah.
And so that's what I decided to do. And I also had a bet with Craig that if I ever won a doubles Grand Slam title, I could officially retire. Or if I made Final Four of every Grand Slam, which I almost did. French is the only one that's missing. If I made Final Eight Club.
So you've now won the US Open. So what is it about Ash and what makes you guys click on the court and the personality?
I've teased her about this a couple times. Is, first of all, she pulled me out of doubles retirement.
Yeah.
One. And I'm like, not many people could have done that. And I had no idea who you were. Like, I know who Ash Barty is, but I was like, I had never spoken to her, really.
Because you're both... Now we know. Well, she's quiet on court and off.
Yeah.
But you are definitely quiet as well off court.
Yeah. I mean, we jab each other a lot. We have actually very similar personalities in our banter and humor. But we play at Indian Wells as the first one because I was sick in Australia. And Tyson had Ash's coach. Talked to Pat asking if I was even interested in playing doubles, and I'm like, and Pat's answered for me because I was sick with the flu, and plus my answer would have been no. And so we go to Indian Wells, and she has her mom there with her, and it's my first tournament since I was sick in Australia. And warming up, and we actually lose in a tiebreaker, like super close, like 10-6, 10-8, something, super breaker. And I'm like, you know, we were almost there. Like, we were playing some really good points, but I didn't know her signals. And we never had a conversation.
When she'd come off a great
When she was playing with Casey, who does way different things than I'm capable of doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ash was like, yeah, you can just lob this return. I'm like,
what?
Dude, I don't lob returns. I hit through a return. I'll try and lob a return, but it's probably...
Have you hit a lob return?
I don't think I have. Oh, nor has that ever terrible. Been my first
Why?
Idea.
Why try it? Well, no one serves in volleys anymore.
Well, maybe this year I'll lob... this tournament, we're playing doubles. Yeah. I could lob my first return. I play the deuce side. So...
To the Lisa Raymond lob.
Jeez, Lisa's got to teach me that. And then we go to Miami, and I'm having a crap time in singles. I'm having a crap time off the court. My, you know, personal life is like, I really was like...
A mess.
I hated the world. I hated tennis. And I was still beat up from last year. Yeah. I played till November 14th, winning the Fed Cup, was getting over the flu after Australia, and I was just in Miami, and I'm like, God, I hate this. I hate warming up. I hate going through stretches.
Life was tough.
Yeah, and here I am playing freaking doubles with Ash.
Isn't it funny, though? Can I just stop you there? Isn't it funny that people don't realize that tennis players actually have normal lives that they have to deal with?
Yeah, you get dumped. Things. You have your parents mad at you. You have your siblings mad at you. You basically, you know... Something broke in the house, and you're like, God, I have to pay for all this, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah, people don't realize that about you.
Yeah.
Right? They just think, oh, there's tough Coco. What's her problem? Why is she breaking her 10th record?
Yeah. Well, it's few and far between. But Ash called me out on how many I claimed I broke during the US Open, but I'll tell that when we're done with Miami. So we play Miami, and we play Babos Mandanovic first round. And we win that in a buster. And then the next round we roll through the next couple rounds, and we're playing Makarova Vesnina, who are the best doubles team at the time, and we lose the first set, and I'm like, God, how do you beat these guys, because they're so solid off the baseline. Mm-hmm. And they return so well. Makarova's lefty service
is
tricky. She places it well. Vesnina's confident at the net, so it's hard to, if you hit a crummy return, she does the right things up at the net. and we sneak out the second set, and we're in the super breaker. And that was kind of the moment where I felt like I picked Ash up with my energy, mm-hmm. and I could feel, it's funny when you're in a partnership and you feel when someone's nervous, or you feel when they're not feeling their best, or when they're jived up, and they pick you up also. And I could feel, I'm like, she's not confident. Mm-hmm. Why is she not confident? We're mm-hmm. going into a buster. This is when you need to puff your chest out and throw your own cocoa strut out there.
It's the
there.
Same thing as what I noticed in New York.
And, same. And that was the first moment where I'm like, I got to kick her in the ass. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like when I was like, when she, I guess, deemed me team leader of the mm-hmm. team, because at that point we were even, she actually was leading me a couple times because I was still learning mm-hmm. from her. I'd taken a year off a double, so I was learning positioning and
is it more important, like,
and seeing.
Is it more important because I felt like that was the same at the US Open, and I actually commentated your match, and one of the things that I said was that I think one of the things that stopped Casey and Ash winning Grand Slams, even though they were in a number of finals,
I know,
was that they... that there was not a real true team leader in mm. the most important times in the finals.
Yeah.
And I said, I think the difference maker here will just be your personality. Not that you're better than Casey, not that Casey was better than you or Ash was better than you, or whatever it is. That doubles is really truly a matter of somebody has to lead sometimes. And it doesn't mean they're better.
No.
I mean, I was definitely more the captain or the team leader of my teams. I certainly wasn't the best player.
Right.
Lisa will tell you that she was the best player.
No, it actually changes, but...
that was a joke.
I'll ask Lisa. But it actually changes for us a couple times, and not in a way of, like... Because I get too hyped.
Well, I was the same.
And
Lisa was like Ash, and I was like you.
And Ash will be like, okay, rein it in. Yeah. Like, I'll... You know, there's moments where you pick a fight over something and she just knocks me and she's like, cut right, it out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, yeah, my bad. Or, like, you saw it at the U.S. Open when I missed the overhead and I snapped the racket. I came back and I apologized to Ash because I was like, that's my bad. Yeah. Like, I let my temper slip and my emotions slip. Like, I'm here for you again.
Yeah.
And that's what I do well with Ash is I know that she's going to be the utmost professional for me, and that gets me... to be the utmost professional for her.
Yeah.
And that was funny when you asked the question when we walked out for the US Open in the final of the question of who's the team leader of your team? And she's like, Coco. And I was like, I wouldn't have said that. But like, I would have been like,
God, I didn't mean to make you think that equal. Much before the final.
No, no, I would have been like equal, but maybe me sometimes because, you know, I come with the fire quicker and, you know, Ash has her own quiet fire and our back and forth conversations is a lot of curse words and banter and, like, you know,
what's the first Aussie word that comes to mind when you think of
righto?
Righto.
Righto.
Righto, mate. That's a classic. I don't think I've heard that one.
She always says that one.
Righto.
But it's like
on you, mate.
It's I'm always a positive teammate because Ash sometimes gets down on herself and I'm never like down openly because I've played team sports. So yeah. I'm like, okay, like I have
so
my.
Why did you pick tennis?
Because I had a bad basketball season with a bunch of girls that were too catty, and I'm like, I don't need this. I can go play tennis.
Really?
That's it. So I didn't like tennis all that much. I like basketball way better.
So you, if you, had, which is probably why you play so well on a team sport, because ultimately you wanted to be on a team.
Yeah,
but
I was
you couldn't
good on
handle
a team.
The bitches.
No,
is what you're saying. You couldn't handle the bitchiness.
I grew up with guys, so the girl cattiness, I still don't get to this day. Mm-hmm. I grew up with my brother, all his friends, all older guys, they're a year and a half older, 2 years. And if I wasn't good enough, I didn't play.
Did you think about ever going to college?
No,
never.
I was never that into school. And if I was going to go into school, like, it'd be for studying and learning.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't care. I didn't care about school. I mean,
I
knew the quota I had to make at school, which was I was only allowed 2 B's, and that was it. Everything else had to be A's. But other than that, I didn't care.
So that's interesting because wanting to be on a team, that would have been the one tennis experience other than Fed Cup.
I actually played tennis for my high school.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So you had that experience.
I have a Letterman jacket. I played varsity.
Wow. Who would have thought? All right. So a couple more because you've been awesome. But quick fire question. New York or Cali? Which one describes
California.
You best?
California.
Oh, okay. Yep. Good. Do you feel with the results you've had over the last couple of years in the semis of a couple Grand Slams now, Do you feel a pressure to win one? Do you feel like... Because I've always said that tennis now has become a marathon rather than a sprint. Like, if you're not winning a slam by 22, 23, you know, back 15 years ago, you're like, oh, you're getting close to 30. Like, it's time to retire.
When I turned pro at 16, if I wasn't... That was when people were winning Grand Slams at 18, 19.
Yeah. Do you think that that has changed now? It's particularly good for you. Because I always said that you... I always felt that you were always going to be better older, because I feel like you're an all-court player. I feel like you can come into the net. I feel like you can play from anywhere in the court. But I also felt like you had to learn a lot how to play tennis.
Yeah, I was not a tennis player. Yeah. I was just an athlete.
You were a great athlete.
And
hit the shit out of the ball.
I didn't know any point construction. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any of that until about... First time I ever learned about point construction was actually I was 21. I was... Maszek, who was a Polish coach I was working with, was the first person that gave me point construction mm-hmm. of how to play a point, you know, watching the game score, that sort of thing. Otherwise, I just played how I felt.
So do you feel like actually winning the doubles in New York and having that experience in front of a packed house? It was packed.
It actually was packed,
which was amazing, because they came in for the men's singles and you guys played so long, you went into the men's
singles. I know.
Singles,
it was great, too, because the USTA let the lower bowl fill.
And talk to me, because, you know, this is part of it. You didn't actually get to do a winner's... speech.
No.
Because they rushed you off because of television. You were backed up into the men's singles final.
Yeah.
So, Coco, here it is. Here's your moment, mate. What would you have said if you'd got the mic that day?
First of all, can I just say,
is pretty fucking terrible. You didn't get that chance.
I agree.
It was the most amazing moment of a player's career.
It may only happen once. You know,
well, I suspect not.
Hopefully not, but
so
it may
what would
only
you have
happen
said?
Once. Well, first I would have cried because it was super emotional. I wasn't even going to play the U.S. Open. I was going to call it a year because of my ankle.
Yeah, well, that's right. Your ankle. Jesus.
Yeah, I wasn't going to play. I told Ash at Stanford, I'm like, I'm probably not going to play U.S. Open. You might as well, you know, find somebody else to play with. And she was playing with Demi a little bit. Mm-hmm.
And doing well.
They won like two events.
No pressure on you then. Jesus.
I kept giving her crap. Like, I'm side chick now. And so I would have probably cried because it was such an unexpected victory in the physical state I was in, the tennis shape I was in.
I lost first round as singles. Semi-final points to defend.
I'd only been pain-free for about 2 days before that first round singles. I was still playing with pain all the way till then. I had to get an injection into my foot. I mean, it's still an uphill battle. It still gets swollen up after every practice, every training session, every match. So I would have thanked, you know, the whole obviously crowd because it was so packed and
it was amazing,
electrifying. Yeah. And I'd only experienced that one other time at a smaller scale at Indian Wells with Bethany mm-hmm. when Bethany and I won. And I would have first thanked them, and then I would have obviously thanked my team with Pat and Scott and everyone behind the scenes because, you know, Pat and I were having a rough patch from basically the clay and grass court season because I was uninterested in tennis at the time still, and then I got injured.
Mm.
And I was uninterested to
take
start again.
Yeah.
I was taking care of myself, but I was already ready to say, protected ranking, I'm not playing again. And mm-hmm. then when I found out it would cost me Australia, because I needed more time mm-hmm. than the 3 weeks I had to get ready for the U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you wanted to shut it down.
I wanted to shut it down
and be prepared
for
Australia,
next year.
But you had to be off longer than that to
yes.
get your protected ranking.
Yes.
Okay.
So then I was like, oh my God, my first Grand Slam is going to be the French Open. Kill me. That was honestly what I thought. I'm like, I called Pat up. I'm like, hey, I'm booking you a flight. We're going to try and play Cincinnati. So Pat and I kind of, you know, came back together in a mutual understanding, and I rededicated myself to 2019. And that was what I'm still training for is 2019. And, you know, ranking be what it is, I'm going to get my ankle healthy.
But wait,
I'm going
you're
to...
still in your speech.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm in my speech. So I want to thank Pat. I want to thank Scott, my physio who was there, Julian who was not there, who's been my physio all year, and everyone, Dr. Ferkel for getting my ankle better in time, and most importantly, my partner Ash for pulling me out of doubles retirement,
yeah.
and also getting me my first Grand Slam out of two tries, which was less than her four. I had to throw in a little jab into there.
Yeah. I'm sorry that you didn't get that opportunity to have that speech.
Yeah, maybe if we play in Australia, the Aussies will do us better than the Americans did.
I can guarantee you that you will get your speech and your time in Australia.
I told Ash I'm going to come to Brisbane afterwards and we're going to play golf once we're both done with the Australian Open.
Who's the better golfer?
I don't know. We have to see.
She's pretty good.
Yeah, I told her if we make Singapore, we're going to go play golf more than we're going to go play tennis.
Well, geez, we're in Wuhan. We're in the hotel in Wuhan here.
And it's turned into a disco club.
So thankfully we're getting to the end of this podcast because we've now got the music going. But last question, two. Who was your idol, aside from your family?
Ooh, okay.
Who was your idol growing up?
Aside from my family, because usually my grandmother was my idol.
With no family.
I know. I would have to say the person I looked up to the most is... I was a Mike kid, Michael Jordan.
Yeah, okay. That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. And the last question, who is the biggest influence in your life?
Oh, my mom. Hands down. Single mother, raised me. My biggest influence, person I talk to pretty much every day, who I call when I need help and look to for advice. So for sure, my mom.
And Coco, to finish the year out, I know it's been a hard year for you with the injuries and, you know, what happened to you. You had an amazing year last year. But this year, I think winning the US Open doubles is certainly going to be, obviously, it's a highlight of your career.
Absolutely.
So far. You've had amazing results in singles. And I've told you this for many years, and you know this, and you can say this because it's my podcast. But I've told you that I believe in you in winning a Grand Slam in singles. I know that you have the ability.
I'm going to get close. So. I'm like I said, I'm 2019. I'm training for 2019.
Does it give you hope that people like Kerber and Panetta and Schiavone and Lina and all these players won Grand Slams at 29, 30 to give you the impetus to think that you've got tons of time?
I never thought about the age thing, but sure. I never even thought about
it. I'm telling you.
Okay, then yes.
Trust me.
I will look at them for motivation that I can still do it if I'm playing tennis at 30.
You will be. All right, Coco, thanks for joining me today. I hope everybody out there understands that Coco might be that cocky, brazen sort of person on the court, but like she said to me on the court one time, you got to fake it till you make it. And she's the queen of that because she's actually a very different person off the court. So I hope everybody enjoyed today. So thanks, Coco.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, and good luck this week.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of the Racquet Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri, Taylor Dalton, and the team at Acast. Find us at racquetmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.